Well, as I told you, our scripture this morning comes from the Gospel of John. It comes from the very end of the book, starting in the 21st chapter at the 20th verse. So listen and see what word God would have you receive today. Peter turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them. He was the one who had reclined next to Jesus at the supper and had said, "Lord, who is it that is going to betray you?" When Peter saw him, he said to Jesus, "Lord, what about him?" Jesus said to him, "If it is my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you? Follow me." So the rumor spread in the community that this disciple would not die. Yet Jesus did not say to him that he would not die, but, "If it is my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you?" This is the disciple who is testifying to these things and has written them, and we know that his testimony is true. But there are also many other things that Jesus did. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that the world itself could not contain the books that would be written. I suppose if the many other things that Jesus did were written down, I suppose the world itself could not contain the books that would be written. Well, that's wrong. It's wrong. If everything that Jesus did was written down, I suppose the world could not contain the books that would be written. Well, everything that Jesus did has been written down. And all of the things that Jesus did don't even fill a very big book. Now, I'm going to get back to that, but that's where I want to start. Jesus in history. What does history tell us about the person of Jesus? Now, I wanted to say something. I couldn't just say, I believe that Jesus existed in history. I don't believe Jesus existed in history. It really doesn't matter if there was this human person at this time. And that just didn't seem fair at all. It seemed like I needed to do my research. So I started to do my research. And the first thing I found out was it's a very dangerous time to do research. Here's what I mean. Have you seen these memes? Like the one saying, "Hey, the guy who copied off my biology exam in high school is now an infectious disease expert." Have you seen that one? Or the one where this guy's sitting at his computer and he hollers to his wife in the other room, hey, honey, I just discovered something that all the scientists and doctors have missed." And this comes from a woman named Linda Gamble Shapiro. "Please stop saying you researched it. You didn't research anything, and it's highly probable that you don't even know how to do so. Did you compile a literature review and write abstracts on each article? Or better yet, did you collect a random sample of sources and perform independent probability statistics on the reported results? No? Did you at least take each article one by one and look into the source? That would be the author, publisher, and funder. Then critique the writing for logical fallacies, cognitive distortions, and plain inaccuracies. Did you ask yourself why the source might publish these particular results? Did you follow the trail of references and apply the same source of scrutiny to them? No? Then you didn't," insert profanity, "research anything. You read or watched a video, most likely with little to no objectivity." Was she talking to me? "You came across something in your algorithm, manipulated feed, something that jived with your implicit biases and served your confirmation bias, and subconsciously applied your emotional filters and called it proof." Scary, she says. Well, that about sums it up. I didn't do any of those things. I did read. I did watch one video. It wasn't great. But I was trying to figure out what is the proof that there was a Jesus who existed in Nazareth around 2,000 years ago. Now, I kept reminding myself, I'm not here to prove that Jesus is the Son of God or is God or anything else. That's not what I said I was going to do. I said I would just talk to you about Jesus in history. And then I read this article this week that said, nothing matters about what the pastor says except why does it matter? I could give you all kinds of facts and figures on Jesus and history, and what would it matter? I don't know. Let me share with you some of the research I did. And because I felt so busted by those words from Linda Shapiro, I tried to fool the algorithms. And I typed in, Jesus did not exist. They probably wondered who it was at my computer. Okay. And so here's the first thing I came up with from Raphael Lattister. Now, Raphael is a lecturer in religious studies at the University of Sydney. So even though I typed up in Jesus does not exist, I was surprised to find this guy who's a religious studies professor until I read the title of his book, There Was No Jesus, There Is No God. This is what he says. The first problem that we encounter when we're trying to discover more about the historical Jesus is the lack of early sources. Okay, that doesn't surprise me. The earliest sources only reference the clearly fictional Christ of faith. So he says right away, all these sources are just talking about this Jesus that people already believed was this faith figure. These early sources compiled decades after the alleged events all stem from Christian authors eager to promote Christianity. I got to give them that, right? That's where they came from. Christian authors eager to promote Christianity, which gives us reason to question them. And then here's his problem. The authors of the Gospels fail to name themselves, fail to describe their qualifications, fail to show any criticism of their foundational sources, which they also fail to identify. Filled with mythical and non-historical information, these Gospels have been heavily edited over time. They certainly should not convince critics to trust even the more mundane claims made therein. That's where I started. And a lot of people evidently agree with them. It went on to say that while billions of people believe Jesus of Nazareth was one of the most important figures in world history, a 2015 survey conducted by the Church of England found that 22% of adults in England did not believe that Jesus had ever been a real person. So that's where I started. Then I changed course, and I found this article. Among scholars of the New Testament of the Christian Bible, there's little disagreement that Jesus actually lived. Can you tell? This is not real helpful. Among scholars of the New Testament of the Christian Bible, there is little disagreement that Jesus actually lived. Okay, I'm reading this with a grain of salt. A man named Lawrence McKittyuk, who is a professor of library science at Purdue University, said that there's lots of reasons to believe that Jesus did exist, and here's one that he gives, which I think is very reasonable. He says, Jewish rabbis who did not like Jesus or his followers accused him of being a magician and leading people astray. They never said there was no Jesus, or he wasn't a rabbi, or he wasn't a religious leader. They said that what he was leading the people in was wrong. So I kept going. There is very little physical or archaeological evidence that Jesus existed, this source said. But that's not hard to believe, because think about it. First century, 99.9% of the population is peasants, not royalty, not rich people. 99.9% are peasants. So their life stories were not being written. The reality is that we have very few archaeological records of Jesus' life, but we have very few records for anyone who lived during Jesus' time. And remember, we didn't know who Jesus was early on. Even the disciples weren't sure who Jesus was early on. They thought he died on that cross. Bart Ehrman, who's a professor of religion at North Carolina University, said, "The lack of evidence does not mean a person at the time didn't exist. It means that she or he, like 99.9% of the rest of the world at the time, made no impact on the archaeological record." So then I went on to see, okay, so what kind of criterion do you use then to prove that Jesus did or didn't exist? And I found a source from John P. Meyer that explained to me five criterion for proving something. And one of them I just couldn't understand at all, so I'm going to only tell you four. All right. One. The criterion of multiple attestation, that more than one source attest to a certain thing. So many of you might think that the only mentions of Jesus are in the Bible as far as a historical figure, but that's not true. There are other historians, including a Jewish historian, who talked about this Jesus, who called him Rabbi, who called him Christ. One of those was Tacitus, one of those was Josephus. So there were these external sources. A second criterion for proving something is the criterion of coherence. In other words, does this thing you're trying to prove fit in with other things that you can prove? So was there someone else writing about the same thing? Was there a historical record that matches up? Like, was there actually a Tiberius who was influential at the time of Jesus? And if that person's written about in other sources, John the Baptist written about in other sources, you can kind of say there's a criterion of coherence. Then there is the criterion of rejection, and this was one I already mentioned, that if there's no one that says this is not true. So in other words, if the rabbis are writing about this Jesus, the troublemaker, this Jesus who's doing all these things, they called him a magician, though. If they're writing about this Jesus that did all these things, well, that's another criterion for believing it's probably true. But here's the one that just really hit me. I'm like, who thinks of this stuff? The fourth one I'm going to talk about is the criterion of embarrassment. It's a real thing. I want you all to think about that before you write the story of your lives. The criterion of embarrassment. What it says is that nobody writes about things that would embarrass them, especially if they're not true. So they go to this story of Jesus being crucified on a cross, which was the death of a common criminal, which is the last thing you would want for the person that you believe to be God. And they're saying that there is no way that they would have invented a story like that about someone they believed to be God or to be divine. It would be too embarrassing. So, there we have criterion for Jesus' existence. There are lots of things I came across in looking at Jesus in history. One of them is this picture that maybe some of you have seen. Well, can you back up one real quick? Because if you've been noticing, I've shown three pictures all the way through. Now, guess which one of those is definitely not Jesus? The one that's in all the Sunday school rooms, right? Okay, so the blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jesus is probably out, okay? And then the top one is the one I'm going to talk about, and then the one underneath that is sort of a newer model of the top one. So that top guy there is a computer-generated image that was created in 2001. There was an English forensic artist named Richard Neave, and he was hired by the Discovery Channel, and he took a model of a first century skull that had been found by road workers in Jerusalem, so he was in the right place, right time. He added strips of clay to a plaster cast that he made of the skull to sort of fill it out, and then he painted his creation, and then he scanned it into a computer, and we have this Jesus here. Now, if I was looking at Jesus, I hope he would not look back at me like that. Like, confused, or really? I wish that the artist had maybe given him a more compassionate look, or a more incisive look, or something, but I agree with the ones that say he just looks a little confused or bewildered. And maybe it's because they got all the features wrong, but I don't know. So here are some other archaeological finds that we have that suggest that there was a real Jesus in history. Now, this is supposedly a picture of the childhood home of Jesus. So for those who believe there was even a city or a village called Nazareth, because not everybody agrees, they have found this home which they believe could be the childhood home of Jesus. And I put that picture of that cup there because I always think about communion cups and what they might or might not have looked like. And that's an actual cup found in that home from the period, made of limestone. And I don't know all the details, but limestone, as opposed to some other kinds of clay, was considered kosher. So in a Jewish home, like Jesus' home, they would have used limestone dishes. So there we have that. And then we have a picture. So historians have discovered what they think are three possibilities for the tomb of Jesus. And this one, the Talpiot tomb, was discovered sometime in the 1980s. So they started doing research on it, and they studied it. And then in 2007, James Cameron and some others made a documentary about this, suggesting that it was the actual burial place of Jesus. And it caused a big stir. Some of you might remember it, early 2000s. I mean, and I don't know about you, but when I hear something like this or see it, like my heart races, like it matters to me in some way. I'm not even certain what it is. But after that documentary came out, many of the experts who were interviewed and who gave their evidence for the documentary came back and said, he took it out of context, he misused what I said, I don't believe this is more likely to be the burial place of Jesus than any other place. So it really diminished that find. And then the third one is probably one that almost all of you have seen. This burial cloth with this imprint of this face on it. And you can do your own research, but most people suggest that it's not nearly old enough to be the burial shroud of Jesus. But from that imprint, then they go to another depiction and another depiction of what the person buried in this shroud might look like. All this historical evidence. So when I started, I said, you know, this scripture, I suppose if everything Jesus did was written down in a book, the world couldn't contain all the books. And I want to go back in that and clarify it, because I was real definitive about this. That's wrong. That's wrong, because we do have everything that supposedly Jesus did written down in books. And it's just, it's a short little thing, sort of like a novella, kind of like maybe like The Old Man and the Sea or something. Just this tiny little book is all we have of what Jesus did and what he said. Now, what we have libraries and libraries and mountains of is what people like you and me said about that little bitty work, about what we think about it, and about what we feel about it. And these questions like, did Jesus exist? Did he not exist? If he did exist, did he say this? When did he say it? Why is it important? So the gospel writer John got that wrong. But I think there's something more important that he got right. So I want to back up and imagine that the gospel writer John is writing about a real man that maybe looked something like one of those two on the right. Imagine him writing about a real man, okay? And this is what he says. Peter turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them, following him and Jesus. He was the one who had reclined next to Jesus at the supper and had said, "Lord, who is it that's going to betray you?" When Peter saw him, the one that Jesus loved, he said to Jesus, "Lord, what about him?" And Jesus said to him, "If it's my will that he remain until I come, what's that to you? Follow me." So the rumor spread in the community that this disciple would not die. So already we have rumors. And this is the disciple testifying to these things. Which disciple? Peter turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them. He was the one who had reclined next to Jesus at the supper. This is the one who is writing this testimony. And so you can know it to be true. That must be what the gospel writer John got right. Because that is his personal experience. This, the one writing, the one who knows that there's a lot of errors in the story, the one who sometimes is subject to hyperbole and sometimes self-doubt, this one, this common one, is the one that Jesus loved. And I must write about that. Now, I know I haven't cleared anything up. You can go online. You can get lost for name. You might send a note to one of your close friends or family and say, "Hey, I'm going to start researching whether Jesus was a real person. If you haven't heard from me in 4 or 5 days or 2 weeks, check on me," because that's how it goes. But I wanted to leave you with something. Nothing that the preacher tells you matters unless they tell you why it matters. So here's what I think matters. This is a story from the book Dilemma, A Priest's Struggle with Faith and Love by Father Albert Cuti. You may have heard him talk about his book when it came out about 10 years ago. He tells this story. A captain became lost at sea despite having sailed for decades and knowing the sea better than most. Those under his care had great respect for him. Somehow, though, for the first time in his life, he had miscalculated the length of a voyage. Now the fresh water supply for his crew had run out. The men were beginning to dehydrate, and the old captain began losing all hope. Suddenly, in the distance, they saw another ship and immediately began to signal it. As the ship drew closer, the captain and his men made signs that read, "We need water, please help us." The response from the other ship came quickly, but it was not at all what they expected. The crew on the other ship had written their own sign in big letters. It said, "Lower your buckets." But the captain was devastated. They were in the Atlantic Ocean. They were in the open ocean. They were obviously surrounded by salt water. Now, for those of you who want to know the facts, let me just tell you a little bit about why you don't drink salt water. Seawater is 4 times more alkaline than the water in our bodies. And so if we ingest that water, the water starts to leave the cells of our bodies to go balance out that salt. We dehydrate. Okay? And we have to drink more fresh water than we drink salt water to create urine to get rid of that. But our kidneys can't work if all the water has left our cells to go fight this salt that's in our bodies. That's what they're facing. So this ship says, lower your buckets into this salt water. The captain was just about to give up, but he thought, let's ask one more time. And they held up their signs. We need water. And one more time, the crew on the other ship held up their sign, lower your buckets. So although he had lost all hope, the captain was desperate. He knew his crew was dying, and so he finally gave the order to lower the buckets. And when they brought them up and raised them to their lips, they were all amazed to find it was fresh water. It had been there all along. What they didn't know is that the output and the power of the Amazon River was so great that it discharges far out into the sea, far out into the ocean, millions and millions and millions of gallons of fresh water in the ocean. Drinkable fresh water in the ocean. What does this have to do with anything, you say? Well, here's what finally occurred to me. You can know all the facts, the dates, the figures. You can have the pictures. But until you get thirsty enough to lower your bucket, you will not receive the living water. It doesn't matter how it works, if it works when it worked. If we have records of it, if we can convince ourselves through facts and figures, what matters is if we get thirsty enough to lower our buckets. That's when we find the Jesus that matters.